Hey, it's Stephanie, and this is Kids These Days, a podcast brought to you by grant funding from the Kansas Department for Children and Families. Hey everyone, Haney here, and I wanted to share with you today about the topic of attachment. And no, I don't mean the best way to get artwork hung on those pesky cinder block walls. If I could figure that out, I'd be a millionaire, right? Nope, I mean the human connection kind of attachment, where we can really look at our first relationships that we've had in our lives and connect them with how we view the people and the world and adult relationships around us. Oh, that was a spoiler alert, but it's okay. I'll keep going. I will give fair warning that when we talk about attachment, it can bring up so many different types of feelings. I find myself constantly saying that what happens in childhood impacts us for the rest of our lives. It's true, it does. An attachment and how we view those relationships or any relationships, that's a giant example of that. So with me saying that, I want to give the warning that in this episode, you might start thinking about your childhood and the quality or not so quality relationships that you've had. And this might stir up some big feelings of yours. And as always, I encourage you to pause when you need to take a break and to seek help if you need it. I'm a huge advocate for mental health, and this is definitely no exception to that. Okay, onward. I always find the history of the field just so fascinating. How have we come to understand the impact of the first 5 years on the rest of our lives? How can we look at these tiny little creatures that we were at one time and have them be able to explain what happens to us in our adulthood, in our adult lives? It's just so crazy. Anyways, so the study of attachment actually started, sadly enough, with some baby monkeys. And this was long before the groups of like PETA and agencies that protected innocent creatures. This was before that they existed. But what happened in these studies with a behavioral scientist named John Bowlby is that he looked at these very, very young monkeys and how they reacted to an absence or a presence of a mother type figure. So he took these newborn monkeys away from their mothers and gave them the choice of two different types of surrogates. One was just like a piece of wire mesh, kind of like a cylinder in shape, that's kind of about the same size as mama monkey would be. The other one was the same shape, but wrapped in a soft, terry fabric. And both of these quote-unquote surrogates, if you will, were set up for what we thought was the basic need, which was sustenance, milk. So theoretically, Bowlby thought, if milk was all that the newborn needed, he or she wouldn't care whether they went to one or the other type of surrogate. They were just looking for the milk, right? But as it would happen, those newborn monkeys actually almost always went to that softer, fabric-covered mother. And that shows that it's not just about the milk, but it's the comfort that's provided along with the milk that's important. Remember a few weeks back when we talked about, maybe about a month now, when we talked about Maslow's hierarchy of needs? The need for comfort and love was pretty low on that pyramid too. The second experiment, it's a little bit much. If you feel strongly about animal rights, you might want to skip ahead by a minute or two. Again, this was the time when there wasn't a lot of control over experimentation with animals. And I am in no way an advocate of this experiment, but it's part of the process. It's part of how we got to be where we are. So I feel obligated to share it. So the second experiment is kind of like the first. The newborn monkeys had two surrogates, one with the wire mesh, one with the terry cloth. They both provided milk. But in this one, the monkey had no choice which one to go to. So he divided the group in half. One went to the terry cloth monkey, one went to the wire mesh surrogate. what we saw, or what Bowlby witnessed, was that while both groups survived and grew physically, their emotional changes were different. So while the monkeys with the terry cloth mother returned to their mom when a strange loud bang was presented, like the scientists made a loud noise, the monkeys went to the terry cloth mother, those wire mesh monkeys didn't. They had terrible reactions. The loud noise happened, they were observed clutching themselves, rocking back and forth, not going to their quote-unquote protector. They weren't okay emotionally. Whew, okay, let's get out of that storyline. I know that's hard to hear, and it's sad to hear about. Hard to understand why a scientist would put an innocent creature through that, but something can be learned from that. It shows that human growth and development isn't just about getting our basic physical needs met. It's also about the emotional component of care, too. We've got to do right by our children by not only meeting what their body needs, but what their heart needs. So, what comes into play is attachment. That's what came out of that dreadful experiment. An understanding that how caregivers react to us as young children creates what we call internal working models of relationships. A fancy way of saying we learn about others and understand relationships based on how we were responded to as young children. And that's through a series of stages, particularly, you know, my favorite, that first 5 years of life, right? So a few different stages, pre-attachment. So that's the first couple of months, babies born, newborn, 1 to 2 months. That's really before they can start to discern or differentiate relationships. They're pretty comfortable going to familiar sounds and smells, but can also usually go to others without issues, right? Next, we see attachment in the making, which is from 2 to 6 months. That's where we really start to see those young infants recognize their familiar caregivers and really positively engage with them. You know, like when the mom or dad can get a baby to laugh unlike anybody else can, right? That belly laugh, that's the best, right? They know they're people, but for the most part, they could still go to another person without concern. They're pretty easygoing still. The next stage, oof, that's the doozy, right? We see this between 6 months to 3 or 4 years of age. That is clear-cut attachment. We basically see this for the majority of early childhood. With clear-cut attachment, we get that beloved stranger danger where they can recognize and know when someone is unfamiliar to them and definitely have no shame in letting you know that they know that there's a stranger. That's what makes drop-offs at childcare so hard, right? It's because they're attached, which is a good thing. I know it's always hard for parents to see their child cry, but when I was a teacher and a director, I always reminded those parents that it's a good thing. It means that they recognize that parent or adult figure in their life as one that they know who loves and supports them and meets not only those physical needs, but those emotional needs as well. And we need that attachment. Our children need to be able to be attached. And it's okay for our kiddos to demonstrate separation anxiety, because that's what shows us that they know that they have caregivers who can take care of them. And the interesting part about human connection, though, is that it's not just attached or unattached, right? It's not one or the other. We all have different levels of types of attachment, and they all impact how we can approach our relationships, how we perceive and deal with closeness and emotional connection, how we communicate our needs and our wants, how we listen to the needs of others, how we respond to conflict, and what I think is most important, most significant, how we expect our partner to behave in a relationship. That's the internal working model that we talked about earlier. Very, very surface level overview, okay? We have 4 different categories of attachment. And I say this loosely because It's like trying to put the human mind, with all of its thoughts and feelings, into four neat little boxes, neat little categories. We all know that just ain't happening. We are such complex creatures that we can try to group people together all day long, but at the end of it, somebody will be across two boxes, or three, or not even in a box, they're in a bag, who knows, right? We're all different. That's what makes humankind so great, but still, we're all different. So these four styles or types of attachment can be seen in kind of like a four square. And they slide up and down on two different axes: anxiety, high and low anxiety, and avoidance, high and low avoidance, aka we can seek others or we can avoid others. Check the show notes for a graphic. It's so hard to explain verbally. I've been trying to like figure out how to explain it, and it's just easier to look at a picture. Show notes, check out the picture. Anyway, our first style is what we call a secure attachment. This is the majority of what we have in the world, and it's what we want. It's our goal. We want to feel comfortable in seeking out others and have low anxiety about it and low anxiety about our relationships. We're just cool, calm, collected, and have positive relationships with others. We trust and assume that most of those relationships are stable and reliable in life. And as adults, we usually have pretty solid relationships. When we have an anxious attachment style, we have a high level of seeking out others, like similar to a secure attachment, but we also have high anxiety. Remember in secure that we had low anxiety. So with anxious attachment, our anxiety goes up. We're possibly over-attuned, and it's not unusual to have a hard time trusting others due to that anxiety. Usually, this comes because maybe as children we received inconsistent messages of love and affection, or that we have to work harder to trust and believe that loved ones will stay. That's anxiety. That's anxious attachment. Third is the avoidant dismissive style. It has high avoidance, which means that we don't seek out others, but we also have low anxiety. So we're not actively seeking relationships due to our feelings of needing to protect ourselves. We have a hard time connecting with others, and maybe we might pull away from our partners when there's a struggle. Usually, this is because we grew up with the need to be independent, right? You know that song, I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-D, right? Yeah. Maybe our parents weren't around, or we didn't get our needs met, so we had to steal up and we took care of ourselves. The last attachment style is avoidant fearful. This one's pretty self-explanatory. We have high anxiety, but we also have high avoidance. So we avoid people, but we also have high anxiety about it. Usually this means that we grew up in environments that were inconsistent with meeting our needs. We never knew what to expect, so it's difficult for us to self-regulate because we perhaps never knew consistency. Whew, okay. A whole field of study in like 2.75 seconds, right? Just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that goes into attachment styles, from its foundation to more about childhood experiences to how we respond and react as adults. You know, not everything, your attachment style now as an adult might not necessarily be from your childhood. Maybe you had a significant life event, or you've had multiple relationships that has changed your attachment style. Lots of things that go into this because it is the study of humans and human nature, and everybody's different. But I only have so much time. And in retrospect, I probably should have done a two-parter, right? But maybe we'll jump into it again sometime later. But regardless, if you want more, I've included a link in the show notes to a pretty good attachment style self-quiz, you know, what is my attachment style? Answer the questions and find out, right? That's a good resource to help you find out more about your own style, which can help to really see how you respond and interact with others and how they respond and interact with you. It really helps with relationships, I'm telling you. And I also want to say, as adults who work with children, we should be doing everything we can to help give them that secure attachment. Notice I didn't say parents of young children, because it doesn't have to be a parent. Maybe it's a trusted caregiver or a family member. If you interact with children in any way, you have the power to create strong attachments with any child you come across. Isn't that cool? That's super cool, right? How do you do it? Super simple. You just have to constantly and consistently show up. You listen to their needs, whether they're telling you verbally or non-verbally, right? You listen to their needs, you respond to those cues, and you meet those needs. You're present. You provide feelings of safety and calmness. You show joy. You show love. It doesn't take fancy, specialized equipment. It doesn't take special approval from licensing. It doesn't take hours of your time. It just takes you, because all they need is you. And until next time, I wish you well. Kids These Days is a co-production of the Casito Kids Infant Toddler Specialist Network and Casito Workforce Development Programs. These programs are supported through a grant from the Kansas Department for Children and Families Child Care and Early Education Services. However, information or opinions expressed herein do not necessarily reflect the position or policy of the agency, and no official endorsement should be inferred. If you have questions, comments, suggestions, or want to share your practice related to this or a previous episode, please email us at kidsthesedayspod@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Kids These Days Pod. Be sure to check out the resources for this episode in the show notes. And don't forget to rate, review, and hit subscribe. This episode was written, recorded, and edited by Stephanie Haney, and music track Hackbeat by Kevin McLeod.